with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
What's up, everybody? I'm back from the dead. It's your boy Prez here for March Madness for the latest episode, episode 5 of Draft Strickland for 2024. I took a couple weeks off there. But now in the middle of upset season, March Madness season, bracket season, whatever you want to call it, we're back. And with us, we have a special guest, not a first-time guest. It's Tyler Wilson. You can find him on Twitter at ProspectingNBA. He writes about draft stuff for Swish Theory. He tweets about the Spurs and the draft and probably some other stuff. And we're here to talk about who the Spurs might pick. I mean, a lot of our, you know, conversation on the internet about this draft has been dominated by discussions of the back end of the draft because the Knicks aren't picking in the top 10, but that doesn't mean that I don't know that all you listeners aren't interested in the top 10 because that is where some of the most fun players are. So we're going to use the Spurs as an excuse to talk about some of those guys today. Tyler, what's up? How you doing?
Dude, I'm happy to be here. Happy to be back fresh off a trip to the San Antonio Zoo. So I'm ready to talk some Spurs. I've got some energy. I'm jazzed. What better team to talk about the top 10 of a draft than a team with two potential top 10 picks and no real foundational talent outside of their center. So it's good. It should be a good chat.
Before we get started, I do have to make a few announcements. First, we have that Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at the Strickland Instagram. We are posting all kinds of new content on there. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are and you have not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel. That'd be a huge help to us. The Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.thestrick.land. There's a link that'll take you to the merchandise store, and you can find all kinds of cool stuff there. T-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, water bottles, you name it, we've got it. The Strickland also has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There's a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, this podcast that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. And you get access to our newest podcast, which is Takes from Obvious Bozos, that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter. There's further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strick and Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave about the Knicks even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Myrna, one of the best in the business. And now you get access to Strictly NFL, which, you guessed it, is our newest podcast that is about the NFL, that is hosted by Constantine Metricos. There are further tiers. It's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and a $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits, like listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not, and this would be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there. And odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to the BetOnline app today and get in on all the action. Remember, use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. We've also got a great new sponsor. I love betting my friends and betting them on anything. Sports games. Who's fast? That's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for MMO. Use our promo code BELIEVENYX, B-L-E-A-V, NYX, for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code BELIEVENYX, B-L-E-A-V, NYX. Cut. Put your money where your mouth is.
There you go. I know. I thought you were going to say fresh off of a trip to see the Spurs play.
We did. Well, I went to the zoo this morning. Spurs on Friday. So I'm good to go. I mean, the takes from the Spurs game on Friday were a little muted by the lackluster showing last night against the Suns. But the Grizz game was fun. They played hard. And Devin Vassell actually looked good in that one. So that was fun.
I mean, the Suns, for all the jokes we like to make, they're not like bad or anything. So I guess that's to be expected, but Yeah, I don't know. I guess before we get to the particulars of the top 10 guys, like, was this your first Wemby in-person game?
This is my second Wemby in-person game, but the first one was kind of like a blur. Like, we had brought our toddler both times, which is like an experience in itself. Like, he absolutely loved it, but the first time was maybe a little bit stressful in terms of like actually being able to watch the majority of the game. This last time was a lot better, so I really got to soak it in a little bit.
That first game, you're not locking in and identifying various off-ball actions and all that shit.
Yeah, that first game, the observations were like, wow, Wemby really is super tall. Like, he looks even skinnier in person. That's crazy. And that was about as far as we got. Second one was a little better, though. So it was a blast. It's a fun environment, even though they're not really winning many games. Hopefully that changes soon.
Yeah, I want to catch them when they come to DC to play the Wiz, because generally playing the Wizards suppresses your ticket prices. Last week, St. Patrick's Day weekend, almost caught this past Thursday I almost caught Wizards Kings, and the lowest ticket price was $2, but I decided $2 was $2 too much for me, and I was busy with my PS5 instead. But when the Spurs come to town, even though they stink, it's like not that far price wise from when the Knicks come to town. So the Wemby show effect is definitely real out here. But
I think sounding like Draymond Green over here. Domantas Sabonis not moving you to get off the couch and go to a Kings game. Man, dude. Anti-Euro takes on the Draft Strickland podcast.
I know. And De'Aaron Fox, one of my all-time favorite players. I just don't give a shit about the Kings.
I've watched a very little amount of the Kings this year, and they're kind of in that sweet spot of like, they're a fun team that's going to be good. Like the Blazers with Dame and CJ, where I was like, oh, they're fun, and maybe they'll have some fun series. But like, am I going to spend my night watching the regular season Kings to see what they're going to play like in the playoffs? Probably not going to choose that an enormous amount of times, I would say.
Yeah, not while I'm here on the East Coast, that's for sure. It was cool last year, but now it's just like, oh, a zillion handoffs and like lackluster defense. Cool. Next. Like, whatever. I've seen it. It's not enough a De'Aaron Fox show for me.
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. I had a post of the Dennis Green All-Stars from when he was like, they are who we thought they were, All-Stars. And I think that the Kings kind of fall in that bracket of like, hey, I have a pretty good idea of what the team is like, and they should be fun, and we'll have some fun series. And there's 0% chance they'll ever beat the Nuggets in a playoff series. And that's fine. And that's okay.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Enough about the Kings, which is low-key one of I don't know. There's always like a 20% chance any episode of Pod Strickland with me and Schwinn will somehow devolve into like a Kings podcast. I can't explain why, but it's been that way for years. But
that's so funny.
Different time and place. We're here to talk about the fucking draft, the top of which some people might tell you is not exciting, is not talented, is lame. And we're here to tell you some of that may be correct. But nonetheless, it's still, if I was picking in the top 10, it's still a time to bring in some nice talent. And if I was picking in the top 10 with Wemby on my team, I would feel a lot less pressure about bringing in finding the Giannis or the Jokic, even though, of course, you always want to do that. So, I don't know. Before we get into the particulars of any player, like, what's your, like, mindset in terms of just where your vibes are, in terms of your preferences are, like, the Spurs are really, you know, they have the foundation in Wemby, but like as far as team building go, they're pretty much in like the beginning steps. So like some people might just say, take the best player. Other people might be like, take the best player who doesn't play Wemby's position. So like how are you looking at this? And I know different people have different opinions on like the non-Wemby guys like Vassell and Sohan and all that. So where are you at in terms of just how you view the goals of this draft?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple different ways to look at it. I've heard a lot of people say things like, oh, well, it's not necessarily a down draft. It's just harder to identify the all-star level talent or whatever. And I think that's kind of dismissing away the questions of quality without like really answering the problem. Like, yeah, there will be people that are drafted later in this draft end up being like really good, but you can still say that the odds are that there's probably going to be a smaller crop of like truly game-changing talent, but there is a ton of talent that is like very high level complimentary pieces that would be, I guess, being drafted in the place where you would hope that maybe you're drafting an all-star. And once you kind of like are able to shift that thinking in your mind, I think it's a fun draft. And I can't remember who said it. I'm pretty sure I heard it from somebody else quoting it who did not know who said it. What was the quote? It was, this isn't a draft that you build around, is the draft you build with. And I think that is a good point and a great way to look at it, that you're not going to necessarily draft foundational pieces, but you will probably find some good options to complement the existing needs of your roster if you look in the right places. As far as like who to take, I don't think I would take Klingon in like the top three, but if he was still there at seven, I wouldn't have a problem drafting another center.
Well, before we get into specific players, like I want to go back to what you said about the drafting with as opposed to what was it, drafting for?
Building.
Building
with. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And that when you put it that way, it kind of illustrate, like if you think of a Venn diagram with like two overlapping circles, like weirdly, even though the Knicks and the Spurs are in completely different positions as franchises, they're still both building with, right? Like y'all have Wemby and we have like our main guys and Randall and Brunson and all that. So but the other thing, like so number one, I do think that means that like outside of the top 10, inside of the top 10, it's harder than usual to find the guy to build around. Inside of the top 10, if you change your mindset to the guy you build with, then it becomes a lot more palatable, I guess. But the idea, I know some people are like, the top 10 is for upside swings. So I guess my first specific question for you is like, not even with the Spurs, but just more in general, like, I guess, no, actually, this is actually relevant to the Spurs specifically. So if you look at this draft as a build with kind of draft, like, are you worried at all about, like, the guys going in the top 10 being, like, fake diamonds as in terms of they're getting top 10 buzz because they have a small chance for a top 10 pick of breaking out into a star, but it's better than the other guys in this draft versus like, oh, these guys are in the top 10 just because they're good basketball players, whether it's about their ceiling or whether it's about like they could play as a complimentary player, right? Because if I was picking in the top 10, I'd be fucking scared if I was a G. That's why I'm asking.
I think that's a completely reasonable point. I would definitely be nervous, and I think that this draft is going to be a draft that favors the more, pragmatic front offices and their like evaluations of prospects. I think that the biggest issue you have with like quote unquote busts or like top 10 like blow ups is a lot less of like the incumbent skills that the prospect has coming into the NBA, but like the role they're asked to play and the way they're asked to develop as prospects once they've actually made it in the league. And I think that this draft is like ripe with potential for prospects like that, be it like Cody Williams or
to be put in the wrong role,
to be put in the wrong role, and then to be now put back 2 or 3 years in your development path and have developed these new habits in a league that you're not going to play that role in. And I think that is like the major cause for a lot of busts. I think there's definitely that potential, and it will require a more thoughtful approach from front offices in terms of like who is worth divesting or investing real development capital into, and who is like, who are the prospects that we're kind of like, how are we going to like funnel them into the roles we want them to have? And I get that it's exciting when you have like a 6'8" guy who can shoot and maybe dribble a little bit, and it's like, oh man, like this could be the next like wing creator. But if it doesn't work out that way and you spend 3 years trying to build that guy and it hasn't worked, that's concerning for me. That would be what would worry me. I wouldn't say there's like specific prospects where I'm like, oh, they're just like not good at basketball and they're in the, like the, getting mocked in the top 10. But I do think that there are certain prospects where I would be worried about the reality-based thinking from their coaching staff and front office, I guess.
Okay, that's a really good way to phrase it. And we can use that as a perfect segue into some Ron Holland discussion, because I know he's number one for you, especially for the Spurs. And I think he's kind of the perfect example. So for people who are less familiar with Ron Holland, he played in for the G League Ignite. Rest in peace. The program is no longer in existence. I
can't believe that.
I mean, I was surprised, but like, on the other hand, like with, maybe I'm just like under a rock, but I only recently learned like how much money these top college players get from NIL, and like they're making money out here. So like, I mean, that was the main reason the Ignite was formed. So I kind of get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's real dope. And like the Ignite training facilities in Vegas are awesome. And like the resources you have there are really good, but it's not like that Duke or North Carolina has like schmucky facilities and like a bad training staff. Like there's certainly less of an advantage. I'm just surprised that they shut the team down like for next year already. It's like, all right, no, we're done. Like we're not doing this again. And like they still have like Dink Pate. It was on a 2-year deal. Like that just feels like not good.
I wish they could take the money they were going to invest in fucking the Ignite and make NBA League Pass not a piece of shit, but they'll never do that. So,
I don't know, man. There's the League Pass thing, like after, I don't know, when was like 2014 and they still hadn't fixed it. It was like, this feels like this never going to happen. And here we are 10 years later. And yeah, it's the same.
I boycotted it until this year and I broke. I was like, I heard it got a little less shitty on PS5. I mean, they did. It went from like, overall, the app experience went from like an F to like a D, but like, I don't know. We'll see what happens next year. But anyway, League Pass aside, Ron Holland, for people who don't know, 6'7"-ish, give or take, wing, came highly touted to the G League Ignite, recruited by a who's who of top college teams, lauded in high school and AAU for being a defense first, high motor athletic wing with some budding offensive potential. And in the Ignite, you know, they did what they've done with some prospects in the past, which is put them in a very specific role that requires them to get out of their comfort zone. And for Ron Holland, who, you know, when you read scouting reports from high school, it sounds like people are talking about some like OG Anunoby type dude. Like they were like, no, you're going to have 30 usage, dude. I hope you better fucking learn how to dribble, because you're going to be our bucket getter. And buckets he did get inefficiently, but like they were asking him as an 18-year-old with a very bad team to score a lot versus a who's who of quadruple A NBA players, you know, and throughout the G League. And, you know, we can quibble about the inefficiency, but like he acquitted himself really well and he got better as the season went on. The jump shot never really came around, but took it with confidence and definitely showed that he belonged. And then he got, I think it was, what was it, a shoulder injury? I can't remember exactly what injury it was, but, or maybe it was a thumb injury or something.
I thought it was a finger.
I think it was a finger injury.
Yeah.
Thumb. There we go. And they correctly decided to shut it down and just let him get good for, you know, the pre-draft cycle and everything. So season's done for him. And he pretty much ranges on various big boards from like 1 to the lowest I've seen him is like 12, 13. I'm sure you could find some fucking people who have him like 20 or whatever. But I bring him up because he's the example of the kind of guy who I'm like, man, look what the Ignite tried to do, right? To grow his skill set. They don't really care about winning. I mean, they want to win, but their goal is development above all else. So they were like, this is what you're going to do. We're going to put you in fucking superstar wing role, basically. And I mean, it did help him develop, but it did not help the team win. So your mileage definitely may vary on that. And if a stupid team were to pick him and be like, top 10 picks are for upside swings, we're going to continue. Say the Wiz pick him and they're like, we're going to put you in the Kyle Kuzma role or something. Like, that's where I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if this is the draft to do that with your top 10 pick, because because these guys have very particular skill sets and all that. But if you took a more calculated approach that wasn't necessarily giving up on upside, but like just slow rolling it a little bit, you'd probably be better off. So tell me about not only why you like Ron Holland, but like if you were the emperor of the Spurs, like how, what would be your sort of like plan ideally for him as a Wemby's, as the Robin to Wemby's Batman? Or I think, pick another DC superhero if you don't think he could be Robin. I don't know.
Yeah, like, is he Nightwing, or is Nightwing too cool? Like, I don't know. Like,
maybe he starts off as Robin, and then later he becomes Nightwing, like Kawhi Leonard style.
I like that. I think that works out well. That's good. I like it. I think that Ron is a really fun prospect. I mean, the energy on the court is, like, apparent. And this, in a draft where there is, it's kind of like you have to kind of go for your high upside swing of like the Dillingham or the Collier, kind of like settle into your safer picks of like the Klingon and the Modus and the various. I think Ron is the best blend of like guaranteed floor and guaranteed and like potential ceiling. And that like is very rarely do you draft like an athletic 6'6" to 6'7" guy who like plays hard all the time. And you're like, dang, he can't play in the league. Like we can't find minutes for him anywhere. Like, I don't think that's going to be really super in the cards for Ron. I think that he's going to find some type of value regardless of where he's at. I don't think that his touch is like atrocious by any means. I mean, you may have different thoughts on that, Prez, but I think that his touch is actually generally pretty solid. I like his floater in the lane, and I like his general coordination and movement skills. I just think that he's just a pretty coordinated guy who moves well on the court, is the youngest dude in the league, and is like strong as an ox. So there's just there's a lot that I like about Ron, and just my general philosophy of basketball of like, I like strength and athleticism. And I think Ron is a great blend of that with like a huge usage in a professional league with real shooting indicators and like some really fun flashes that I think are like important to see out of teenagers playing against men. I think that if I'm gonna ramble into like what the Spurs ultimate plan would be with Ron, is I think that, and I guess you'll probably like this, I think that Ron's kind of like Keldon Johnson with like actual hops and athleticism, is kind of like how I would view his general path of like, maybe Keldon is a six man now, and that's probably his ultimate role going forward with where he is defensively. But I think Ron is a super powerful downhill driver that has like a shot that's more conducive to shooting off the dribble. But in general, like Keldon's first 2-3 years in the league were like stand in the corner, catch closeouts, and then just like try to dunk on people in the lane, and will slowly build out your pick and roll repertoire over time. And you'll have had practice with that in your season in the G League, and will kind of just like add to your usage slowly but surely. And I think that's like the ultimate idea with Ron. Like, he's going to have to shoot, and there's no way you're going to speed run a shooting development for an 18-year-old in the NBA. Like, that's going to take 2 years plus. Like, it's have to. But to at least, I think that it would be easy to find a spot for him on a roster, especially if there was like real shooting on the roster, which maybe San Antonio could use an influx of in a different circumstance. But I think Ron would be awesome. And I just think that he's would be a really great three in between Devin and Jeremy Sohan and Wemby. And I think he'd be an awesome fit. I love Ron.
Ron, like, I really am, like, I think his driving is the ticket, and Keldon is a good call. And I also think of RJ Barrett a lot when I watch him. They're different players in a lot of ways, but both of them were like, before they got to the NBA, you know, RJ at Duke, Ron in the Ignite, their coaches were like, guess what, dude? You're going to put up some fucking shots, and you're going to drive. And even if you can't shoot, you're going to shoot too. And you're just going to sink or swim with that. But
it's time to learn Kobe, buddy.
Right, exactly. But like, there was no Zion or Trey Jones or Cam Reddish on the Ignite to help win some games. But like, the driving stuff is so real for him as a kid. And you're right, I really like his touch. He has some really like saucy layups that I'm like,
yeah,
oh, this isn't just like brute force out here. Like, you got, like, I'm not worried about like the RJ problem of him just being like, I'm just gonna throw up a bunch of junk ball shots or whatever, and instead of just you know, passing out or whatever. Like Ron Holland, like nobody's going to be like point Holland, but like he'll pass the fucking ball out. Like if he has to pass the ball out, like he's not a stranger to just the basic, like, oh, I drove and then there's people there and I will pass it to somebody. Like he's got that level of feel down, which took RJ a while.
Yes, having watched RJ and Keldon, having that level of feel is an 18-year-old is super impressive and like a big point. Because I mean, watching Keldon, you watch him in Kentucky, even it was just like, and even watching him last night, on Friday night, my wife was there, and we have watched Percy for a long time. We've always loved Keldon. He's a great energy, and she's like, I can't stand this. She's like, he's just got to stop shooting. Like, I can't believe he's still shooting again. Like, it's just unbelievable. And yeah. And which like it, you know, that was that kind of summed it up. And I think that. That's something that you kind of have to have in you to an extent. It's something that it does get built out, but it is definitely a mental hurdle to get over. And the fact that Ron is already like not somebody that has like blinders on at all times is a huge plus.
It's totally mental. And that's the biggest thing with like with RJ, right? He was picked third in a good draft and he had like the pedigree, right? Like he wasn't. Like Ron was like the high motor. Maybe he learned some offense. He'll never cheat you on effort. RJ was fucking Maple Jordan, right? So like he spent the entirety of his beginning Knicks career. Well, not beginning Knicks career. His whole Knicks career, basically being like, I could pass, but fuck that shit. I'm Maple Jordan. I'm gonna shoot. And now that he's in Toronto, which I predicted, you know, there's a lot less pressure for him to like. He can just like. Play fucking basketball, and he stopped that coupled with him just not like quiet quitting. He's like all of a sudden just being a little more reasonable with his finishes and his passing. And I think with Ron having played different roles, right? Like having been the motor guy, but also been like the hub of the offense, and then coming to a place where I don't care how nice you think you are, you're gonna be fucking practicing with Victor Wembanyama. You know who's the top dog out here, right? And your coach is Pop. So, like, that is one thing I am not worried about with Ron is him. Like, of course, he's going to be inefficient at first. Most rookies are. But, like, he'll pass the ball. Not, like, he won't have, like, tunnel vision all the time, which is, like, the main thing I'm worried about. Because, like you said, the shooting will take a while, which is fine and natural. So, all you can hope for is that, like, he's the best. He like continues to improve his ancillary team skills as he improves the shooting and stuff like that. And part of that is like learning NBA defense. Part of that is just like, you're going to come in really good at driving. How do you learn to leverage that? And you know, if you're on the Spurs, like you fucking drive, just throw it up there. Wemby somewhere, man, he'll catch that shit somewhere. So like, I think it's a good setup developmentally for him.
Yeah, the biggest thing that's happened the second half of the season is that like various members of the Spurs have realized that when you get in the paint and like you think your shot's gonna get blocked, just like throw it up, just like throw it in the air, and it's probably gonna be an alley-oop. I guess that is the easiest bailout in the NBA right now, is just throwing a ball 10.5 feet in the air and being like, all right, let's see who gets it first. It's really cool.
Just do like New York Knicks Griff style. Just fucking take the layup and this guy will go get the rebound if it's a break. Like it'll probably be fine.
The good old fashioned Kobe assist. Yeah, it works incredibly well when your center is 7'4" and can like jump through the building. It's pretty nuts. And in regards to the whole like shooting in the blinders on kind of like chuck it mode, I remember watching a video of Kevin Durant watching high schoolers coming into college, like in that recruiting class of like their like highlight videos. And I remember getting to Keldon's and being like, this guy's a bucket. Like, you need somebody in this class to get you a bucket? That's Keldon Johnson right there. And I remember being like, man, dude, that he watched that video. You know, Keldon Johnson watched that video of Kevin Durant calling him a bucket. And you can see it. You can see it in him. But I think that there's a lot of good for a guy like Ron in a place like San Antonio. And I think that what we talked about earlier, the idea of having the right developmental path and having the right like outlook in the beginning of your contract on your team that drafts you is huge too. And I think that you see that with what you saw with RJ in New York was he was drafted third overall to the Knicks. There was nobody there. Like he was the dude and he was drafted to be the dude. And it turned out like he wasn't one of those dudes. He's just like a good NBA player.
Yeah.
But changing from that perspective on the team that drafted you is like, that's like a really tough line to walk. And so if you come in too hot, like it's over. Like, it's not like it's, you're going to have like some like, oh, happy second draft style, like career. No, this is called a second draft for a reason, because they need to go somewhere else because it's not going to happen there anymore. And so that would be the thing that I'd be worried about with other teams. In San Antonio, I'm much less worried about that, just because the only rookie that's ever come in their first season and like had a shot selection that was above their head is Victor Wembanyama. That's the only person that's ever happened in like 20 years. So I think Ron would find a fit pretty well. Had to beat out Sidy Sissoko for minutes though. You know, it's gonna be tough stuff.
That's my son. I was very high on him. There's still time. I still believe, but well, that's
the shot's coming along a little bit. You know, I think the only question with Ron, yeah, the only question with Ron is like, how many like shot projects are you willing to take on, I guess, as a part of like your roster? Because there, you're already like getting to a point where like with Sohan and like Vic's shot is good, right, but it's going to need some time. And like, you know, the Trey Jones thing, and Keldon still doesn't really shoot it that well. And you got City, and then it just kind of just keeps going. So I don't know. That's, we definitely need shooting, but I do think that in this draft, I would be okay to not take a shooter, especially with the first pick. In hopes of finding like a real true blue third star or second star or somebody that can kind of fit in that lexicon. And I think that Ron is the best bet to do that, at least in San Antonio, I would say. And in general, I would say that as well, because I maybe give teams more credit than they're deserving of in terms of like having a real plan for developing somebody.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, having potentially multiple picks definitely would make me feel a little bit better. And I like City and other people in that draft taught me the importance of like, guys just have to have, like, they have to be able to score from somewhere at an NBA level, mm-hmm, pretty much, if they want minutes now. And at first I was worried about that with Ron, but I think he can score plenty at the rim from day one, even if everything else fails him from the beginning. So yeah, right now, and the Spurs, go ahead.
So, and I think in regards to the shot, and I know that like you're not as like super high on the shot, I would say that like he is like a senior in high school age guy. Like high school 3-point rates are like around like 30%. And it's like average, I would say. Like if you're in the 30s, like you're shooting well from three in high school. And
yeah,
Ron exactly did that from NBA range. Shot with what, 26% this year from
with
NBA
all
range,
the defensive attention.
With the high school shot selection of just like being like, hey, dude, get us a bucket, take a three off the dribble. Who cares? So the fact that like it was a really bad number, it's not good. But I don't think that Ron is like a non-shooter or somebody that's going to be like Jeremy Sohan, where you're like, Jesus, man, like what is going on?
I think that Ron. I've come around on his shot. And I mean, like, ultimately, like, one way to categorize guys is like, do they need tweaks or do they need overhauls? And I think he's a tweaks guy, which is completely fine. That's a lot
that's
of players.
A
great way to put it. And, you know,
so you're not going to be getting reformation videos in the middle of the season like Jeremy Sohan.
Yeah, you know, one handed fucking free throw experiments or whatever. Yeah. So, all right. So we're about halfway through this pod. Ron Holland, Tyler's pick.
Ron's
good.
Ron's my guy, so I'm glad we spent some more time on Ron, because I really do think that he's going to be awesome. And I think that he's like one of the youngest guys in the draft. Like, he's a really good bet.
Yeah, and he's just a go-getter. Like, I just fuck with his like attitude. Like, he's just going to be fun to watch in the NBA. But currently, the Spurs have, you know, if the lottery shakes out how the odds currently are, the Spurs have the third pick. Obviously, they could jump to two or one or whatever. Spurs get the third pick, second pick, fourth pick, whatever. And say my second team, the Washington Wizards, says, no, we want a fucking power wing bucket, and we're picking Ron Holland first. Eat a bag of dicks, Tyler Wilson and San Antonio. So what are we doing then? Like, what are you looking at in that situation?
So, like, in my board, my general tier would be Sar, Modest, and Topic. And I think that I would be fine with going anybody. Honestly, I would be fine taking Dillingham or Collier there too. Like, I would be, if you're just like, hey, we want to go for our guard and we really buy this guy. Like, we just think that the way we want to play, he's the perfect fit. I would be like, dude, go for it. Kill it. Let's do it. I think that that's probably the least likely outcome in general of like drafting one of those, specifically one of those two guards, and it being them being like the part of the plan moving forward. I think that's I would love that. That's what I would want to do because I love both of those guys.
And if they really wanted to do that, they could probably trade down and do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you could trade down. But you think even in a trade down or with the second pick, I think the odds of them selecting Collier or Dillingham is probably pretty low. Mm. Just because I don't think that they are going to want to go into next season with a rookie guard. Because yeah. I just think that, especially with that the guard position where you know you're going to be back a year or two on somebody actually being like productive in an NBA rotation, like actually helping you win basketball games, I just think at that point, like Barber's already met the road and like, you need to have your team in place by then.
Yeah. So and we've talked about this, but like Trey Jones, boring as he is extremely reliable and solid. And like,
yeah, like he's good.
He's going to be better than any rookie point guard next year. Like, yeah, exactly. Like it's just what it is.
100%. And so like, unless the plan somehow involves like making some kind of trade to like draft or to like acquire some like star three or somebody like some like star forward to play next to Vic. And then now you've like decided to kind of punt the guard question and take one of these guys you like and bring him along slow and run it with Trey. Like I could see that, but I think that is like by far the least likely outcome. It seems like the Trey Young trade has like real fire there. I don't think that's just smoke. I think that that was like real conversations and like real, like real intention behind it. And I think that's going to come along again this summer. I would bet probably after the draft. That seems like when most star trades happen now is like that after the draft and free agency kind of in that dead period. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. And if that's the case, I'm all in on Matas, man. I love Matas. I think he's really good. I think that he has kind of got even more so than Ron, especially in the beginning of the year. I think that he got a bad rap for the just general failure of the Ignite. But I think that he's a really, really, really good team defender. I think that he's super smart, is really locked in for a team that's not very good defensively. And I just buy the shot. I think that he can shoot it. And I think the size he's put on has been good. I think he's awesome. So that would be my choice for sure. Yeah.
So for people who don't know, Matas is the second guy on the G League Ignite. He's from the Chicago area. He's about what? Like he's pretty fucking tall. He's like 6'10", I think.
Yeah, 6'9", I would say. He's maybe 6'10".
6'9", perhaps 6'10", long neck fraud, also like Ron Holland. But he came in to the league, I mean, the G League, with the reputation for being a really good shooter, being a giant, albeit extremely skinny wing who could do stuff on the ball, perhaps even too ambitious in terms of his cool passing and his his favoring those sort of decisions. And, you know, he was part of the Ignite and went through some injuries. The shooting numbers were kind of down for a lot of the year. When Ron Holland got hurt, he got significantly more shot attempts, right? There was a lot because that was a 30 usage guy who went down. It was like the equivalent of Randall going down for the Knicks or something, or Brunson going down for the Knicks. So he got a chance to cook a little bit, and I think he acquitted himself pretty well. I haven't gotten to watch a full game of his since Holland went down, but just like catching bits and pieces, it looked like he was definitely getting more comfortable out there. And then you alluded to his putting on some muscle, some strength. I think the reports were what, that he went from like 190 to like 205, which still sounds light for a 6'10", 6'9" guy, but like you got to start somewhere, and that's really important for him. So that was kind of cool to see. I know his block and steal numbers kind of shot up at the end of the year too. And so, yeah, like, I guess my question about Matas, like, what position or role does he play to you?
I think
he seems like a versatile guy. So I don't even mean that as a, like, it's like a bad thing. I'm just like, there's a lot of things you could do with this guy in terms of development. So I legit don't know, like, with Wemby, like, you got to throw out all the fucking blueprints and you got to be creative. So curious what you think.
Yeah, I think lineup fit and like role generally is going to depend, at least for me, on like your defensive aptitude. Like, who are you going to guard and like where are you going to be best at? And I think that especially in San Antonio with a spot with Sohan, who can also kind of guard everybody and do a little bit of everything, using Modest as like an off-ball forward that can protect the rim some and kind of like make smart rotations. And I think his closeouts are actually really, really good for a guy that's huge and he's kind of like a four almost. Mm-hmm. Like he covers ground so well and is like super coordinated. He can be a little bit stiff at times, and I think that affects him more offensively than defensively. Like I wouldn't want him navigating screens per se.
That's hard for any 6'10 guy.
Versus like Jeremy Sochan, like I'm fine with that. Like, yeah, dude, like go kill somebody. Coming off the screen, let's do it. But with Modest, I don't think that it would be something I wouldn't love him on like a Luka style person, but I would love him as a help defender in the back. And I think that his size allows for that. And offensively, I mean, coming into the year, there was a lot of like on ball hype with him. And there was a lot of like Franz talk, like, oh, is he like Franz-ish? Like the next version. I think that is way over your skis on that one in terms of like actual quality. But I think that as far as a role goes, as being a guy who can like hit open shots and has shown throughout the year an improved ability to handle contact on drives and get to the rim, I think he fits really well as a complimentary offensive player. I wouldn't want him like as like a 30 usage guy, as we said, like with Ron. But I think as far as like playoff durable forward wings that can like essentially hang on any team in any lineup, I think he's about as like fail-proof as it comes in this draft. And like, again, I think that obviously that revolves around him hitting shots off the catch at the very least. And I think that is, I super buy that. I mean, he's a little bit stiff, but it's a pretty clean motion. And I think that with a real guard and like another year of adding strength, that should look a lot better. But I think that he's just like a skeleton key of this draft. Like he's going to go on any team and probably be fine because he can kind of do anything.
Yeah, totally. And
as long as you don't ask him to do too much with the ball, like if you're asking him to run a bunch of pick and rolls, like then he will fail. Like that is going to be a disaster. Let's not do that. But as far as like playing in like an off ball kind of role offensively, I don't think he's going to screw anything up.
Yeah, I buy the shot as well. He's, I don't know, it just looks good to me. So I'm not really tripping over the numbers too much. And he has really great touch both on jumpers and at the rim. So like taking floaters and midi pull-ups, and he got the little like the Klay Thompson, I'm taller than you turn around. Like he got some of that. And yeah, he could put the ball on the deck a little bit. It's going to be a little harder, of course, when he's in the NBA just because he's so skinny. But like there's, like we were talking about with Ron. Well, Ron is like skinny strong, so it's different. But like Matas has time to get to like a hopefully passable level of strength. And he's so tall that like all you're really talking about is like one or two dribbles without like getting knocked off your spot. And that's
plenty for him to cook. he's shown much more of a proclivity to like put the shoulder down this year. And mm-hmm. like I do think that myself for him is like much more as like a truly like awesome defensive player. And that like I think that when I kind of envision thinking about his like generalized role, like Jaden McDaniels isn't the perfect option because I think that Jaden McDaniels is like awesome on the ball and like it's kind of like an alien in that. But if you kind of take that part away and just have this like hyper versatile wing who can block shots and disrupt passing lanes and kind of be everywhere and covers ground really well, I think that he fits incredibly well there. And that's just kind of a player that, especially on as a Spurs fan who's watched teams with bad defense, like that's just a team that every good defense needs. And so I think he's good as long as the shot comes around, which I think it would.
One player who I didn't like who has acquitted himself well in the NBA, particularly this year, they're not the same. And I try to avoid like white Euro comps, but like I think I watch Denny a lot because I go to a lot of these cheap ass Wizards games. And he was always kind of a like, I was low on him for a bunch of reasons. We won't get into that, but like a couple seasons into his career, he was a very good defender who could finish and just kind of couldn't shoot. And I think Matas is coming into the league like leaps and bounds ahead as a shooter. But like in terms of just being able to do a little bit of everything, I think there's some similarity there, except Matas is even taller than Denny, who's not short. And, you know, Denny is having his first good shooting year, and it's basically like catch and shoot stationary from three. And I think by the time Matas is Denny's age, he'll be able to have much more shot versatility than Denny does. So if he can even approach like the defense of just like being able to guard up, guard down on the ball, it'll be great. And then the off the ball stuff you mentioned, like Denny doesn't even do. So like I, that's where the comparison kind of falls apart. Cause I do think like, I would love to just like, if the Spurs had like more serious players down the line, right. Which hopefully they will have. Matas is like, I'd love to, like, if they were playing the Knicks, I'd love to like just fucking somehow stick Matas on, like, I don't know. The Knicks are good. So I don't know. Like, whoever the least threatening Nick is who's not a center, and just be like, Matas, go fucking roam and just be big and in the way and block shots and in the passing lanes and all that shit, because he's fucking gigantic. So
he's huge and would be awesome there. Like, I think, especially in a team with Trae Young, if that is the ultimate goal and you want to trade for Trae and use some a large amount of draft capital, I think that Matas is a great, great fit in that. It's just like, let me clean up some messes here. And I think that you have Vic, who is like part of the appeal. Like, oh, he could play the four and like he can, you know, kind of like be like a secondary rim protector, and you can have this nutso defense, which I think I like in theory, but I think that the more you watch, the more you realize that like any minute spent, it's him like not playing the five is kind of like lost money in terms of like rim protection, and it's not valuable. So like, a guy like Matas is, would be an awesome fit.
And the good thing is, even if you want to do that for spurts of time, say like they sign a center who's a solid rim protector backup to,
yeah, he's gonna have somebody better than Zach Collins,
right? Like, if you want to go Wemby at the four, center at the five for a spell, you can put Matas at the three, because again, like,
oh, yeah,
he's basically like a stretched out wing more than he is like a forward, so it'd be fine.
Yeah, you could do some jumbo ball lineups, it would be super fun. And so, if that is that he is. Probably my, well, he's maybe not anymore, because some of the general consensus on him has turned around over the last couple months.
Pretty
but
high.
For a long
pretty
while, he now, was my favorite in the class in terms of like general perception, because I just think that the stuff he showed in the G League I think that it was almost even a worse fit for him in the G League than it was for Ron, because I think in like, at least in some ways, Ron was like, well, we're going to give you the ball and you have an excuse for why you have like poor efficiency. And whereas like with Matas, it didn't have quite the usage rate, but still was like even more dependent on having somebody actually get him the ball in like decent spots. And so his general efficiency throughout the year was really poor, but I really had a hard time holding that against him just because the guard play on that team was so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. All right, the other guys you mentioned was Alexander Sarr, the large forward / center question mark from France playing in Australia, and Nikola Topic, who is the large-ish lead guard, point guard, who got moved from, I forget his first team, to Red Star. And then got hurt, so we haven't
Mega,
seen him
right?
in a minute. Yeah. Oh yeah, Mega, the Prospect Factory, to Red Star, and at Mega he was lighting it up versus adults in a way that very few prospects do over there, and we've seen quite a few NBA prospects come out of that league, Adriatic League, and he went to Red Star, played a little bit, much smaller role, got cooked a little bit, then got hurt. So
like two games.
Yeah, some people I know were like, "Oh, he didn't look so good." So in the two games, so I'm gonna. It was a much better league, much better competition, EuroLeague, all that. And so like they held it against him. I gotta watch those games in full, but like he was still playing versus adults and for Mega. So like I'm hard pressed to nitpick that much, especially in this draft. So give me. I mean. We'll get to Sarr because I think the Sarr pitch is a little easier because it's actually kind of similar to the Matas pitch where they're just like gigantic with some skills and can help a lot on defense, and any offense that comes along would just be like
gravy.
Yeah, would just be gravy. But Topic is like this guy, you draft Topic to get buckets and run a lot of pick and rolls, and I guess my first question for you, like, oh, there's two questions. One is like, where are you in terms of just like evaluating him compared to other lead guards, past or present? And then, you know, there's enough touches for multiple stars on any NBA team, but like Topic to me is like, you want him running a lot of pick and rolls. And of course he could do that with Wemby, but with Wemby, it's like in the back of my head, I'm like, you could run pick and rolls with Wemby running the pick and rolls. You can run Wemby in the post like Jokic style. So I'm like, do I want a player who like is that limited in the roles you can cast him in? Because he's an awesome prospect, but like he's not really some off-ball sniper right now. You kind of, if you draft him, you're like, all right, this is a traditional bucket getting downhill point guard, and we got to give him a lot of pick and roll reps, and he's going to have to work that shit out because he's 18 years old. So like, what are your Topić thoughts?
So my general thoughts on Topić is I think that he's, like, as far as like comparing him to league guards past, I think that that's kind of like a hard evaluation to make, because he's like a wing guard almost, because he does have like real size and but like also like a real lack of sauce that like is apparent, you know, like you watch
really
pictures. Like I think that, well, I'd
be shocked. Sometimes I'm watching and I'm like, oh, he just broke this guy's ankles.
Well, I think that there's a little bit of the, there's a lot of like, he does the same stuff over there's the less of the like creativity of like I'm working in this fair. Like this like phone booth of like your typical like Kyrie or like Dilly handles. I think that he does a good job with his momentum. I think his like downhill driving is really good.
He has like two or three extremely reliable moves going downhill, and he's very fast. So his bag is small, but it's a nice bag, as opposed to Dilly, whose bag is like, he just like makes shit up on the fly.
Exactly. And for me, like, who is like a 28-year-old dad who has very little 2K time, like Topić is going to be awesome for me on 2K. Because it's just going to be like, dude, just get him downhill, hit the crossover. Like, it's fine. Like, you're good to go. Maybe you can spin into a layup. You're, like, great finishing touch. Don't have to use the stick at all to do any dribble moves. Like, he just do his thing. Like, that is, he's very straightforward. Prospect in that respect, but I think his passing is legitimately really good, and I think that his like this division that he has, the change of deliveries, like both hands, I think he's a really really awesome passer, and I think that his finishing at the rim is like it was really 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 good. Well, I think he shot like 68% on layups this year at Mega, which
he has great and he's 6'6", like you said. So
And like I think that they had the whole measurements. They came out and said he was like 6'7" with a 7-foot wingspan, which like,
bruh, if that's like, true, that's
an
crazy.
That's an absolute lie. Like, there's no way. Like, whoever, like, I think it was Givani who tweeted that. Like, he knew he was lying when he tweeted it, and he did it anyway. But like, I don't care who measured him. I do need to measure myself if that's the case. That's nuts. There's no way he has a 7-foot wingspan.
That's literally the same dimensions as RJ Barrett.
Yeah, like that's like a little bit like smaller than OG and Anobi. And so that's not the kind of comparison we're making here. But I think he's good. I think that he did play in like a favorable environment at Mega, just because they have like in their league, they're the most talent laden team by like a good margin. It's like kind of like the Premier League in that respect. Of, like,
and the scheme they ran was very good for him.
Yeah, that's what I said. They really schemed him into like a lot of downhill looks and getting him like ahead of steam versus having to like just create from a standstill. It's like we said, it doesn't have like the sauciest handle in the world and isn't like hitting step back jumpers over you, so you don't have to guard him up quite as tight. But I think that is like somebody who has the makings of like a real like drink stirrer on offense. I think he's like a really fun bet. I think that the jumper is probably closer than the numbers would say in terms of like being just like getting to a passable point. I do wonder where like anything off the dribble happens. It's like meaningful. I mean, outside of like punishing unders. So I think that if you can punish unders, that's like, it's almost like a set shot. You know, it's not like you're actually really hitting an off the dribble jumper. You're kind of just like shuffling into
one
it.
One dribble, one, two dribbles with behind the screen. Yeah, I
exactly.
agree.
That, he showed he can do like, that some. And I think that that is something that he'll be able to do. Like, killing people in the mid-range or like hitting like sidestep threes, it's not going to be something that I see happening. But in terms of like hitting the barriers you need to for his role, I think that he will do that offensively. So I really like him. I just wish he was a little bit better defensively to be in like my the same tier as Ron in terms of like I'm super excited and this is like how I would like compare other like top picks in the past. I think Ron's probably like definitely on the lower end of top picks, but I don't think Topić should really be in that like could be a number one pick discussion in most drafts, just because the defense is really a concern, I think, and like the general shot versatility, just I don't think is ever going to be there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. Like, I really like him as a player, but his weakness to me, it's less about like, yes, the defense, the shot, but like collectively his strengths and weaknesses mean more so than a lot of other prospects. You kind of have to bank on one role, right? Like, there's there's Topic's the pick and roll point guard, where his offense offsets his defense, which you hope gets to a level of like, this is
fine.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, that's pretty much it, right? Like, and I'll say this, like, not to get too philosophical about scouting, but like, my biggest misses are when I lack the imagination to envision a role where a player ends up flourishing. And I'm like, damn, I didn't think of that. And but like with Topic, I'm like, no, he's gonna sink or swim as a point guard who's running a lot of pick and roll. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, if a team drafts him and he's not doing that, then I don't know what the fuck we're doing here. Maybe I'll miss again, but I'll take that L if that happens, if he's good in some other role. But
see, I would push back on that a little bit in terms of like, if the idea is like he should be able to hit shots off the catch pretty well, at least at some point in like the relative future. Like, he shoots a really good number from the line. And is an awesome like downhill player, especially when he has like a slight advantage, like a half step, like be it like attacking a closeout or something with like awesome vision. I think is like that kind of like secondary creator on the backside of a pick and roll. I think he could be really good there offensively. I think he could be like a super fun piece that like would, as somebody who like when they would get the ball would immediately create looks for other people and like actually involve the rest of an offense. I think a lot of the times when you get those like the close out attackers on like the second side of a pick and roll reaction, like they're like getting to the bucket and it's like I'm gonna score, I'm getting my look. I think that Topic would really do a lot to kind of like continuate the offensive possession in that respect. I do agree though on that, like if he's gonna be playing that role, like you probably don't want him to be like flirting with the worst defensive player on your team or on the court at least. And that is like, I don't know, he's big and he could figure stuff out, but I do think that he's like pretty weak, especially in his upper body, in a way that like makes me concerned with handling bumps and pressure on defense. Like on offense, I think that he's shown he has like the balance and coordination to deal with it, but I'm not sure he has the like there's like that natural like bungee cord kind of like action where you get bumped and you get pulled back into the play because like your athleticism kind of pulls you back forward. I don't think he has any of that. I think there's a lot of like getting put on your ass, and we'll see. He'll be a really fun evaluation. I hope that he goes somewhere that really gives him a chance to kind of like play with some space.
Yeah, bring him to the Wizards so I could watch him. That'd be fun. That was a good point about the like if he gets his catch and shoot right, like on offense, he can definitely cook. And I'm just looking at I just went on NBA.com and sorted the frequency of player drives and then did only guards, and I'm like, okay, like yeah, they're different players, but like I think of someone like Dennis Schroeder, like to your point, like he developed enough of a jump shot that like he can play with other guards, right? And he's like been very successful as a starter, as a bench player, and it sounds kind of like a boring outcome, but like that's a pretty solid player. And that's like a shorter player, like a much smaller player than Topic. So like it's if the anticlimactic outcome is like a little bit taller Dennis Schroeder, then like that's pretty cool, right? That's actually fine.
I know that's actually a pretty reasonable, I think, comparison in terms of like, I think that Dennis gets comped a lot to like the Dennis Smith Juniors of like the world of like, just other all these like speedy the guards that are good. But it's like people underestimate the fact that Dennis Schroeder as like a youth player was fucking awesome and was like one of the best international youth players in like the world when he was a teenager.
And he turns into fucking Michael Jordan when he suits up for Germany now. Like
he was awesome. And so I think that and Topic, I think has a lot of that same juice of like he's actually a lot better of a basketball player than you would expect or that most prospects are coming into the league. At least in his role and the success he had at Mega was like really was like out of the norm. And so I think that he could be awesome. I really do like him a lot. You gotta kind of put him in the right spot.
All right. I don't want to spend too much time on other guys, but the other topic I wanted to cover is briefly the Spurs have another pick, right? So like there's a couple questions that we can just end with. One is like, as far as, you know, we've identified the guys you like the most for that first pick, whether it's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but the Spurs could potentially have a second pick. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what's your philosophy towards that pick? Like, using it, trading it, punting it? Like, where are you at in terms of just, like, team building with that pick?
So my thoughts on it is that it's what is top six protected this year, top six protected next year. Uh-huh. And then I want to say maybe 1 year more top six protected, but then eventually it turns into 2 seconds, which would be really a bummer. I don't think that'll happen. The calculus of like, should you keep the pick if it's like the seventh pick, which is like the highest pick it could ever be, obviously, but in a down draft versus like, what does that equate to in next year's draft? And like, what is the time value of that? And right. So that's like a really hard like calculation to make. I definitely want to keep it in whatever degree we can. I think that the team desperately needs like real young talent. And like maybe like defensively oriented talent would be awesome.
And would you want to convey this year, or like would you like if the Raptors ended up pick, you know, sixth and therefore it didn't convey, would you be like, oh, this is sad because two players this year would have been cool, but you know what's cooler? Two players next year or whatever. Yeah,
I think that would be my general take. Is like two players next year is better than two players this year. I think my only fear would be that if you don't get it, I think that if they get both picks this year, it is probably guaranteeing that you're going to have two rookies on the roster next year in terms of like will bring both people to camp versus if it rolls over into next year. And then they make the Trae Young trade this offseason, like maybe that Toronto pick gets included in the trade deal. And then that kind of like bothers me a little bit more because I don't like that. I would like to have two picks in 25 no matter what. Like that would be super nice. There's also the Chicago pick we have that year too, and the Atlanta pick. So there's a lot of different options there. But I do think that getting the pick this year and getting somebody in that can kind of grow with the existing core would be super helpful, just depending on who it is. Like, I mean, if you take whatever, like I think there's a real chance that Richard Say goes one. Like, I think that he really does like have juice in front offices to go one. And I think that he could go one to San Antonio. And that would like really disappoint me. If that were the case, I would, and the pick did roll over next year, I would be devastated. If we walked out of a draft with potentially having two first round picks and just had Zachary Richesse, I would be apoplectic. It would be a disaster.
For my entertainment purposes, I want the Spurs to take Richesse with the first pick and then one of the guys you like with the second pick, just so I can be online and watch you go on that emotional
roller coaster. That bailout would be awesome because I think that like seven pick range is there's going to be a lot of like really good potential players. Like I think that like this is going to be rich for some people, but like I would take Devin Carter at seven if the Spurs traded for Trae Young.
No, you're not allowed to do that.
And like you can't do it. Like do it. Like just do it. Like there's going to be people that if you have the right circumstance for them on your team, that they will be really, really awesome cogs in your rotation, perhaps starters or like high level bench pieces. But I think guys like Devin Carter or Colin Murray Boyles, if he stays in, or obviously Reed Shepard is awesome and kind of fits in the same kind of tier there. They could really feel like valuable roles. And I think that would be a fun pick. And there's also the chance that like Ron or Matas or somebody falls to seven, and that would be fun too. But I think that it would be really good to get additional talent in early, but I do think that in general, Spurs fans kind of underestimate how much further down this draft is versus like a strong draft next year. It's not that we're going from like, this is one of the worst drafts since 2013, which I think that's true. But then to go to next year where it's like, it's not like you're going to like a league average draft. You're going to a draft that's like, widely regarded as quite strong, you know, like that's a big change. And I think you could wind up with the 15th pick next year and it'd be a better player than you get at seven this year. And isn't like crazy. So it kind of depends on how the whole machinations play out, but I do think that people may be like, they're like, oh, it's the seventh pick. You're never gonna get higher than the seventh pick. Like, but what is the actual value of the pick is my, question. I think that it will be more specific to you and your team needs than it would be in other years. Like a lot of the time you get into the 20s of a draft and it's like, oh man, if you draft this guy, they could be a really awesome fit for your team. You have like a bunch like Jaden McDaniels was in that boat of like,
sure,
oh well, we'll take him, he fits in perfect, we've developed him, it's been this like great success story, whatever, like maybe it'll work out. Like, that you're going to be taking guys like that at like 11 or 12 this year, and that's just a totally different calculus. So I don't know, I think that I would like to keep it depending on a talent is what I would say. I don't know.
That's super reasonable. And that leads me to, I have two closing questions, two quick hitters for you. The first is about a hypothetical scenario. And the second is just a good old fashioned who's your guy scenario. So for the first, would you prefer to make an offer for Trae Young where you kept your two 2025 picks, but you traded a bunch of other shit that includes picks and Devin Vassell? Or would you prefer to, a deal where you got one pick, where you end up with one pick next year, but you keep Devin Vassell?
That one really, like, that haunts me. You know that I have been flip-flopping on this back and forth, like, every day. Like, after every game, I will send Prez, like, a shot of a box score and be like, and have a dramatic reaction either way to a Devin Vassell stat line. That's tough because the money calculus of it is difficult, and it's hard to, like, wrap your head around the fact that the cap is, like, increasing an exorbitant amount over the last like 3 or 4 years, and that, like, $30 million a year or 27 for Devin is, like, not really going to feel like that.
Right, for sure, in the future.
I think I would choose the one where we only have one pick next year, but we keep Devin. I think that would be it, because I do think that, especially having been at the Grizzlies game, and this Grizzlies team this year is terrible, man. Like, they're not good. there's not a lot of guard play on that team, and they play hard though, and they were definitely a fun opponent to watch live in that respect. But there was just, after if Devin wasn't shooting and Wimby really struggled to shoot that game, like, there's just nothing, you know, there's no, like, creative juice on that roster beyond that. And if you trade Devin as part of a Trae Young package, I think that you wind yourself up in a, like, kind of a similar circumstance. And, like, as many issues as I have with Devin Vassell and his offensive consistency, I guess, and maybe his defensive excellence, I think that in a smaller role where he's asked to produce less every night, I think there'll be a little more consistency and just developing someone into that. Like, let's say you take Ricochet and you're like, he's 6'8" Devin Vassell now. He's going to be the guy we develop into. It's going to take 3 or 4 years to get to that point, to that, like, level of, like, an offensive wing that Devin is. And I think that that time for development is not really feasible with what they're trying to do, especially if you trade for Trae. And then in that case, you're like, okay, well, we need to get a wing scorer with the rest of our picks now. And then you're kind of just, like, you know, like, paying on top of yourself to try to, like, fix the things that you use to acquire your second star in the first place. So I think I would choose to keep Devin, just because I think that the odds of finding somebody that could, like, fill that void is that's, like, a long, it could take a while. And in that case, like, you've wasted, like, a year or two. Versus, like, in 2 years, Devin might be, like, the perfect third star. Who knows?
That's a good answer. I think that is definitely the more, like, conservative answer for a lot of reasons, which I think is why it makes sense, right? It's there's two mystery boxes, and, like, you're like, oh, you know what you have with Devin, upside and downside, and then you still got a cool mystery box from a cool draft. So I get that.
Yeah.
Okay, the last question I have to bring us home is, you told us your top picks for the first Spurs pick. So say the Spurs pick 7th or 8th or something like that, and you get Ron Holland, and there's no Trae Young trade, but Topic and Matas are off the board. So who are your top five guys you're looking at for the Spurs in that situation to complement Vassell, Holland, Wemby, Sohan, and Trae Jones?
Perfect. Throwing Trae Jones at the end there just, it really stings, you know? I mean, that hurts. I think that my first pick would be Collier. I think that at Collier, it would be an awesome fit on that roster. I think his passing is so good with both hands. I think his touch around the rim is awesome. He is a bowling ball who has gotten into a lot better shape as the year's gone on. And I think that his stretch of games when he came back from the injury has been really impressive. I think his shot is probably closer than Topic's. I think it's closer than Ron's. I think that Collier will shoot pretty soon. I just think he's good. I know you're not the biggest Collier guy in the world.
I'm a big Collier guy.
Yeah.
I'm not like top five for him, but, like, that's,
yeah, still he's five for me. Here. Yeah. Yeah, he is impressive. He's really good. I like Collier a lot. And I think that both Collier and Dillingham kind of represent this idea of, like,
he's an eight for me. I just checked. I don't have, like, my numerical ranking out there, but, like, if I did, he'd be like 8 or 9 right now.
Yeah. And I think that Collier and Dillingham are both guys that represent this idea of, like, prospects that will not fit on 20 teams in the NBA. Just, like, they won't. because of their size and their skill limitations and like the way they need to play basketball. But if they wind up on one of the teams that it fits and it actually does hit, like, it doesn't matter where you rank them. It was too low. Like, if either Collier or Dillingham hits, they're the number one prospect in this class, like, period. Like, and I think that the odds of that happening are definitely a little bit lower, but I think there are teams, especially like San Antonio, that like desperately need that. I would choose Collier just because I love strength and I love his downhill driving. And I just think that I'm all about it. I had Collier one coming into the year.
Same.
Really liked him. And so I would probably still choose him, especially if you drafted Ron first. Just getting Ron and Collier in the same draft, I would just be like, dude, we're ready for a bar fight, man. Like, we're ready for WrestleMania. Like, let's freaking go. Like, I'd be so jacked. But other than that, like, those two guys, I think Reed's really fun and really good and would be a great fit in any team, pretty much anywhere. I'm not quite as moved on him as like a top five guy like some people are, and like the star upside of stuff, just because I don't know what physical tools are there besides the touch and like the balance to like truly like leverage to like an extreme degree. But I think he's really good. I love Reed. Colin Murray Boyles would be another fun one. Just as, like, but we already have Jeremy Sohan, but I'm not sure how long he would be in that circumstance for San Antonio. Big dude to play defense. I think Rich Shea kind of fits in there as well. Same with Flip, of just like size and defense. We desperately need that. In terms of like hashing out the roster, if you're trying to like guards, wings, forwards, and bigs, like going into next year, it's like Jeremy Sohan and like, do you consider Keldon a forward? Because that's it.
That's true. He's so pretty small for a forward.
Yeah, I kind of prefer to use him as a wing, and that is so definitely need like one or two more forward bodies in there, which would be, I think any of those guys would be good fits. I'm not the biggest Stephon Castle or Cody Williams guy, but like I would be fine with those. But I would definitely prefer like Ricochet or Flip or Reed or CMB. But those would be my guys that I would look for at that pick. I would probably choose Collier from the guard perspective and Ricochet from the wing forward, but he's going to go too high. So then I'd choose probably CMB. I think he's awesome. He's just like, San Antonio needs another Boris Diaw, man. That would be a great fit.
I hope he declares. That would be fun if he ended up on the Spurs.
Yeah, I think he's going to get like a top 20 promise and he's going to have to declare. I don't know how you could be a team in this draft and not go to this guy and be like, hey man, like you're a remarkable defensive player with like an enormous wingspan as like an 18-year-old. Like, I think you can play in the NBA. I don't know. I would be bummed if he didn't declare, but we will see.
And he would, him and Collier, like the upside for the Spurs is like a little less risky just because you give them more space, right? With Wemby doing Wemby stuff all over the fucking place. So it makes development, like the whole problem with those guys is like for most teams, like say the Knicks managed to land either of them, I'd be fucking thrilled. But like at the same time, it's like, oh, every single minute that we have one of those on the court, we're going to be at an offensive disadvantage because like other teams, if they don't have the ball, just won't give a fuck about them. But like, if you're the Spurs, who the center has the ball a lot and is the scoring threat, which is the opposite of the Knicks, like that's not as much a problem.
Yeah. San Antonio's run a ton of Wemby, Trey Jones pick and roll this year, where like Wimby's the ball handler and Trey Jones is the screener. Imagining that with Collier instead would be awesome. It would be super fun. Sign me up for that every day of the week.
Yeah, if there's any guard who could learn to set a good screen, it's this fucking running back looking motherfucker. So yeah,
to get a running back and get a second incarnation of Boris, that's a great draft for me, man. I think that we're good to go. We got the long skinny guy and just a bunch of dudes who could punch you in the mouth. That would be my dream.
Yeah. And CMB, unlike Collier, can hit the glass and rebound quite well already. So like from that perspective, yeah, it's like
that
would be very Knicks-y in the sense of like, we'll figure out offense later. Like, we're just going to get a bunch of guys who lock up and hit the glass and then rely on one guy to do our scoring and everybody else just like get rebounds and we'll figure out the rest of the shit in the years to come. So
yeah, if there's one way that I like can really relate to Knicks fans, it's that like ethos of like, just man, we just draft some people who can play some freaking defense. Like, that is what we need. That is like my whole general draft philosophy. It's like, what are the odds that you become an actually good defender? And if they're positive, then they're probably in my top 15. Like, that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, that's a simple but effective draft strategy that often teams do not choose to implement in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I'm sick of like no defense wings just like existing on teams' benches. And like Malachi Branham, this is directly at you, my guy. Like, lock up, dog. Like, come on, man. Like, we have people who score the basketball that have the ball the most of the time. If you're not one of those people, I really think that you should play defense. Like, I really think that should be required. That's one of those things in the NBA where like, I get it. Like, the Marco Bellinellis of the world are super valuable to coaches because they know what they're going to do.
Nick's killer, Marco Bellinelli.
And like someone described it as Pop knows when Marco's going to make a mistake versus he doesn't know when Lonnie Walker is going to make the mistake, but he knows exactly what Marco's going to screw up. And so he's okay with that. And I hate that. I don't like the whole like no defense wings. That's not my thing.
All right. You heard it here from
had to finish on a ramble there for a second.
Yeah, that's good.
You drafted the best defensive player in like the history of basketball, and like you still have a pretty like not great defense. I'm just frustrating. It's frustrating.
I mean, it's good when he's on the court. It's just exactly. When he's not on the court.
I know. It's literally anybody else involved. You're like, oh no. But yeah, I did want to say you guys were right when I came on earlier this year and you were talking about Hartenstein versus Zach Collins. And I was like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of like a toss-up. Like, I don't really have a preference. Like, I think they're both pretty good. Like, Hartenstein's way better than Zach Collins. I'm sorry I ever said that. Strickland listeners, I'm sorry for lying to you guys. That was not true, what I said.
We just did an exercise on our last pod with a couple of the Knicks, the non-stars, so not Randall and not Brunson, of basically, like, in their kind of role broadly defined, like, who are you taking over? Deuce or Hartenstein. Like, what's the worst player who's probably good who you're taking over these guys? And, I don't remember who it was for Hartenstein. I think it might have been like legit like Şengün. This is for right now, like not necessarily like, yeah. Oh, if I'm starting
would have
a team.
Hartenstein over Şengün. I think I would choose that.
That's what I chose too. For Schwinn, I think Şengün was the cutoff, and I forget who it was for me, but like we went through like all these other centers, like Miles Turner. We were like, yo, get fuck Miles Turner. Like, I'm taking Hartenstein over all these fucking guys, basically, who are not like the hardest one was like, who do you like more, Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson? Like, that was the hardest one.
It's a tougher question than you would think. If the Knicks win a title this year, man, Hartenstein's getting a statue. Like, he's going down in Knicks fame. Put him up in the rafters. This guy is incredible. The fact that the Knicks actually are like as good of a team without Mitchell Robinson as they were before he went down, or at least like relatively similar, is like insane. And I think Hartenstein's really good, dude. It's been a bummer watching him this year because any other team in the NBA could have had him and not have also had a wonderful starting five who can dunk and block everything. But now the Knicks have two great starting fives.
I mean, any team can have him next year. Like, that's the low key. Like, I don't, it's tough. And this, I don't, we can end on this Knicks tangent, but like, the worry with Hartenstein is like, oh, like exactly what like a team like the Spurs that in theory can make or has cap space and could use a center is like, he's so good. Hartenstein is so good that like he's absolutely worth like 15 or 6. Like, that'd be a great fucking deal. But the downside is like with a lot of the NBA teams really relying on occasional small ball. And you can't even call it a small ball with the Spurs, right? With Wemby at the five, because he's Wemby. But like, it's like, all right, if Wemby at the five is a world destroyer, like, are you going to invest 15, 16, 17, 18 in Hartenstein, even if he's good? Like, I don't know. So that's why a lot of Knicks fans seem to be like a little worried, but not too worried.
Yeah,
so
not when you invested 15 in Zach Collins already. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I even forgot about that. So, yeah, don't want to sink more money into that problem potentially.
Oh man, just give me a guard, man. Give me a guard, please, God.
We'll get you Trae Young. We'll get you Trae Young, and then maybe as a special bonus dessert surprise, we can find a taker for Zach Collins or something.
Oh, so. Dude, I would be okay with that. I think. Sorry, Zach, but times have changed, my friend.
Zach Collins for, I don't even know who's playing center for the Wizards these days. Danilo Gallinari or some shit. So we'll make it happen. Tyler, thank you for coming on the pod. This has been fun. Thank you for going a little extra. I think the listeners will definitely appreciate it since it's been a while since I recorded, and we're officially at the point where the people who aren't lunatics like us are hitting me up and asking about this prospect or that prospect, including the top guys. So your appearance could not have come at a better time. So thank you for joining.
I appreciate it. A bunch of draft talk in the middle of March Madness on guys that aren't in March Madness, but I love it. I love it. It's great stuff. Draft time is the best time of the year. Don't get fooled by false upside. It is a fickle mistress. That'll be my parting words.
There you go. And you can follow Tyler at Prospecting NBA, and he writes for Swish Theory, which is an awesome draft website and Twitter account that they put out lots of good work on NCAA guys, international guys, you name it. So be on the lookout for good stuff from the Swish Theory crew. Shout out to them. And that's all we got for today. I hope all your brackets flourish if they're not already in shambles. Can't relate. Didn't do a bracket. Prioritize my mental health. And on that note, listeners, I will bid you goodbye, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.